Natalia Cicchelli is a registered dietitian working in the specialised areas of disordered eating, or eating and dieting disorders, and children's health. Originally from New South Wales and now based in the United Kingdom, Talia works at Retrition Clinic to provide personalised nutrition consultations in person and online. She runs her own business, Talia Cicchelli Nutrition, which aims to help her clients nourish with balance, offering realistic, accessible evidence-based advice and nourishing recipes. We are very excited to discuss Talia's career thus far and what it takes to work in these areas. Please welcome Talia.
So hi Talia, welcome. How are you?
Hi, I'm really good, thank you. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Thank you so much for joining us all the way from London. It's pretty early there, so we really appreciate you making the time.
Oh, my pleasure.
So with all our guests, we like to start off with some quick fire questions. So our first question is, are you a restaurant or home cooking kind of person? If so, which one's your favourite dish or place?
I think an ideal night would actually be a nice home-cooked meal, and it would have to be some sort of pasta.
Mm. Is there a specific type you like to use?
Ooh, either fresh homemade gnocchi or something like a slow-cooked ragu.
Oh, yes. I love
those too. Yeah.
Second question is, what have you enjoyed most about isolation?
I think it has been not having to fit as many things into my diary as normal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I've still been really busy with work, but not having all of those extra activities to try and balance has been, it's been nice to have that break.
Yeah. And our third question is, what have you been consuming recently, either a book, a show, or an article?
Yeah. I recently watched Modern Love, which is like it's a series on Amazon Prime based off a column in the New York Times. So I highly recommend that. It's quite good. Okay. And then books. The last book I read was actually one on a gentleman that is a comedian in the UK that is recovering from anorexia. So that was quite an interesting read.
So it was like an autobiography?
Kind of. So he uses comedy to, I guess, educate people about eating disorders. So it wasn't like any other book I'd read, because he was really creating a light on his recovery and using comedy to tell his story. Yes, I've recommended it to a lot of my patients, yeah.
What's the book called?
It is Weight Expectations, I think One Man's Recovery from Anorexia Nervosa, something along those titles. The author is Dave Chawner.
And the fourth question is, what is one thing we can't find out about you online?
I am quite scared of horror films and the dark.
Do you have a particular genre of movie you like?
It would always be the romantic comedy, just something lighthearted.
Yeah. And our final question is, what did you want to be when you were a child?
I wanted to be a dietitian since I was 15, but I think before that there was, I thought maybe I'd be a teacher or a vet. I think I wanted to be a florist at one point, but yeah, I have been set on dietetics for a very long time.
That actually goes perfectly into our next section, talking a bit about the beginning of your career. We kind of want to know, at age 15, what did spark your interest in nutrition and dietetics?
So I played some representative netball, and we had a dietitian come and speak to us when I was 15. And I just remember sitting in the talk and I was just so impressed. Like, I learned so much about nutrition. She was talking to us about nutrition for sport at the time and how to fuel our body. And I just walked out and I was like, yeah, I think that's what I want to do. I want to be a dietitian. It was really as simple as that. But I always loved cooking. Like I packed my own lunchbox from when I was 9 years of age. Mm-hmm. Used to bake for the family and help mum cooking, and was always into sport. So I think I would have gone down that sort of career anyway.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And what areas did you enjoy studying, and what did you kind of struggle with?
My favourite subject, I think, was anatomy. And I enjoyed like the hands-on practicals. Like I really didn't mind chemistry. I loved chemistry and biology. I studied those in high school, so enjoyed those during university as well. The hardest subject for me was physiology. Yeah, still cannot wrap my head around things like the Krebs cycle or all the other ones, which I've now forgotten the names of. But yeah, that was definitely the hardest for me.
Yeah, I think a lot of us did struggle with that Krebs cycle in first year.
Yeah.
And can you tell us a bit about the placements you completed during your degree? And how'd you get them, and where did it end up leading to?
Yeah, sure. So I studied at the University of Wollongong, mm-hmm. and I volunteered to do a rural placement. So I don't know if anyone's aware, on the South Coast, Bega. So I did one.
Where the cheese is made?
Yes, Bega cheese. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I went on a rural placement down in Bega, which was my final placement. And I think that was so valuable because being in a rural setting, you're exposed to a whole range of different areas of dietetics. Definitely would recommend that if you have the opportunity to do a more rural placement. And then I did a placement at Prince of Wales, which is one of the large teaching hospitals in Sydney. And there I was based on the surgical ward majority of the time and did a bit of renal. And then my other placements, I was really lucky to get one of the industry placements. I don't know if they still do those now, but at the time I thought that I wanted to work in the food industry. So I got a placement with Arnott's Biscuits and Campbell's Soup. They were combined. And then my final placement was working in a nursing home. So it was my food service placement.
Okay. Wow. That's quite a range.
Yeah. It was a really good mix.
Yeah. During that placement period, did that kind of help you kind of narrow down and focus on becoming an eating disorder dietitian? And can you also like tell us a bit about any other formative experiences that might have led you to being an eating disorders dietitian?
Yeah, so during university and then the first couple of years after graduating, I definitely did not want to work in eating disorders. Eating disorders were something that I thought would be a very challenging area to work in. Mm. And the first couple of years after I graduated, I worked in general medical, surgical wards, the typical new graduate sort of caseload, lots of malnutrition, aged care, rehabilitation wards. And then I got seconded to cover for a dietitian that left, and she covered the pediatric caseload. And I thought I'd do something a bit different and ended up really enjoying it. And then when a position came up at one of the children's hospitals in Sydney, the children's hospital at Westmead, I applied and ended up getting that. And then on my first day when I was getting my ward allocations, the manager told me that I'd be working on the eating disorders unit, and I had a bit of a freak out because I'd never thought that I'd want to work in eating disorders, but I absolutely loved it. And that's how I started my career in eating disorders. I just fell into that area. Mm-hmm. And then I went on to I stayed in that role for 2 years, and then I went on to work in adults, so both in a private hospital in Sydney and in a community role with the public health system.
I think that's really interesting, because it's something you probably never thought you'd do. And I guess stepping out of that comfort zone and just being kind of just thrown into it, you never know what doors it can open up.
So, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And so one of my best friends had an eating disorder during uni, and I remember her telling me about her recovery, because she's fully recovered now, which is incredible. But I remember thinking, what is the dietitian telling her to do? I was like, why is she getting you to eat all this cake? It's not good for you, and all of these things. And it wasn't until I actually started working in the role and I was like, I get it now. It's so different to what you learn at university, which is, I think, another reason why I like it so much, because it's not your traditional dietetics role.
Mm. Yeah. Most of your learning had to probably come from the job.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say at university, I think we did one lecture on eating disorders, but it didn't really give you any skills on how to work with someone that had an eating disorder. It was just, this is what an eating disorder is, the different types of eating disorders. And that was basically all that was covered.
What you just said is really important, in the sense that also if people want to leave university and they're not 100% sure where they want to go into, like, to know that you, in a way, kind of, just, I guess, this field that you now specialize in kind of discovered you in a way. You didn't kind of have this idea in mind. So that's really good to know as well for any students that are listening to these podcasts and thinking, oh, these all sound really interesting, but I don't really know where I want to go. Like, having just been open to trying new things and seeing, you know, where you end up, I think that's a really valuable lesson as well.
Yeah, definitely. And before that too, there were moments that I didn't have full-time dietetic work. So there was a couple of times in the few years after graduating that I did take part-time work in a cafe. I dabbled in private practice. I think I lasted a month because at the time it wasn't right for me, whereas now that's what I'm working towards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I even had a role for a few months doing some food service work in the public health system. And again, at the time, I didn't enjoy it. So there were times that I was sort of chopping and changing and putting, you know, sticking my toe in different areas, but it's just about trying. It really is just about trying any opportunity that's given to you, and it will fall into place.
And speaking of opportunities, during uni, did you do any extracurricular activities? And how important do you think they are for students? And some students, I think, also feel, is it too late, especially if you're kind of in your third year? So, yeah, what are your opinions on that?
Yeah, I worked a lot during university. So I held a part-time job and was working close to 30 hours a week while studying full-time. So I didn't really have the opportunity to engage in that many extracurricular activities. I volunteered a couple of times with sort of places like the Cancer Council, Red Cross. But yeah, majority of what I did was through my work. So working in the hospitality. And then in the final year of dietetics, I actually got a role as a dietitian assistant, which I think is really what helped me to get my first job. So it wasn't really the extracurricular activities. It was because I already had my foot in the door working in a hospital.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think, you know, everyone comes out with the same degree, but if you can be different in any way, so whether that's extracurricular activities or your previous work experience or a really different sort of placement that you went on volunteer work. I don't think it has to be nutrition related specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And remembering too that when you get your job, they're looking to see if you're a good fit for the team, which is what I think helped me to get my first job. It wasn't because I got the best marks or anything like that. It was more just about being the right fit. So don't think that, you know, when you go for those first few interviews that you've failed in any way for not getting that job. It may have just been that you weren't a good fit for that department, and maybe the next one or the one after that is going to be a really good fit for you.
Yeah, I think that's such important advice. And personally, I didn't think of, like, people who are working full time, you know, who might not have that opportunity to even consider volunteering. And that's the thing. It's at the end of the day, we're all doing things outside of uni that enhance our personal set of skills. And that's, and like you said, it's got to match that team or that area. And like you've demonstrated as well, it's not going to be kind of like, yeah, set out and clear from the get-go. So yeah, I think I'm kind of starting to see this thing of kind of feeling it as you go and just, yeah, figuring it out.
Yeah, definitely. Just, I'm a big believer that things will happen for a reason. Yeah.
For sure. And to wrap up this section, coming out of university, did you feel you were ready to join the career force, or was there something, a steep learning curve you had to kind of, battle?
Yeah, I think coming out, I had so much, what's the right word? I think I thought that I was going to be like this amazing dietitian. I knew everything. That's what I thought. I was like, I know everything. And then going into this, you know, new graduate position, I soon realized that I didn't know that much in the scheme of things. So learning on the job, it, like, everything that you basically learn will be on the job. That is where all of my learning has taken place. University gives you a foundation of knowledge, but all of the skills, even your, you know, your counseling skills, your knowledge relating to different, you know, specific areas of dietetics, that is something that you'll continue to learn and evolve and build on the more and more years that you're working as a dietitian.
And just a quick question, follow up on that. During that time, like learning on the job, how useful and or valuable were the, I guess, mentors or the people that were, I guess, guiding you during that time?
Very valuable. Yeah. So I did my APD the first year after graduating. So I had my mentor, who was one of my supervisors for one of my placements. And then, so I worked in a very small hospital. So there was only myself was the full-time dietitian. And then I had my manager and the senior dietitian who were part-time. But I think the important thing is that you don't just learn from dietitians, you learn from all the other allied health professionals as well, and the doctors and the pharmacist. So it's opening your eyes to asking questions from the nurses, pharmacists, doctors on how, you know, how things work, how your work as a dietitian might interact with their work, and how you can actually work together and really work as a multidisciplinary team member. So I think it's, yeah, just, again, expanding those opportunities, shadowing, like I did some shadowing work with the speech pathologists to learn more about what they do, and definitely with the physio and the occupational therapist as well in my first year. So yeah, I think definitely having a really supportive mentor and setting up regular sessions with a senior dietitian in your department, which usually happens if you are in a clinical role anyway, but if you are working privately, then 100% setting up a really strong network with a mentor or two, or just catching up with dietitians for coffee. You know, I think we're very nice people and we like to help each other. So definitely reaching out and just, yeah, trying to see who you can have a chat to learn more, and really engaging in professional development wherever you can as well.
Now we're going to move on a bit to looking at your career now. So I think maybe we could pick up where you just kind of going back to when you just landed that first kind of part-time role in the eating disorder ward. So I just wanted to know how, like, what was that kind of jump? Because as you, as just going back to also what you said before, you did, you know, one lecture kind of getting a bit educated in maybe some of the terminology and, you know, eating disorders in general, but not really to actually work with eating disorder patients. So what was that learning curve like? And yeah, can you walk us a bit from through your experiences from there?
Yeah. So the first year or two working in eating disorders, actually I'd say 2 to 3, because they were different roles, was a very steep learning curve. My first eating disorder role, because it was in adolescents, so children and adolescents, the role of a dietitian is very different. So when you work as an eating disorder dietitian with children and adolescents, the usual method of treatment is family-based therapy, which really targets the parent's role. And the dietitian sort of sits on the outside, just advising the parents, but not really engaging with the patients themselves, because the psychologist takes on the lead role. And so it was a steep learning curve, but in a way it gave me an opportunity to observe again how the multidisciplinary team works. And I think I saw in 2 years, I think I saw 3 patients one-to-one. The rest of my work was solely seeing parents and giving them education about how to feed their children once they were discharged from the hospital. I think most of the growth was when I then went into my clinical role on an inpatient unit for with adults. And that was very steep. I think it was learning about the language that you use in eating disorders. And I really needed to upskill quickly on my counselling skills, my motivational interviewing. So for the last 5 years, I've just been putting all of my energy when it comes to professional development to areas that are going to help me become a better dietitian in the eating disorder space. So I've focused a lot of my professional development on improving my counselling skills. I have done motivational interviewing. I've done cognitive behavioural therapy training, family-based therapy training. I've done health at every size. And now in London, I'm doing some master practitioner in eating disorders and obesity. So it's run by the National Centre for Eating Disorders. There is an equivalent association in Australia as well. And there's 3 modules. So there's eating disorder component, which is very psychology based, and it's completely changed the way that I work with my patients, particularly in the private setting. And then there's an obesity module and a nutrition module. So it is really about focusing on the area that you want to work in. For me anyway, that would be my recommendation, to really hone in on those skills that you can use to better your work in the area that you're in.
And just from, so you worked for a few years in Australia in eating disorder roles, and then how did you get from there to the UK? What was that transition?
Yeah, so during university, I came over to Europe on a summer holiday, and I spent 1 week in London, and I just said to myself, I need to live here one day. I absolutely fell in love with it. And so it took me 8 years to finally make the move, but I got here and definitely did not look back. I think it's been the most amazing opportunity. So I worked in Australia for 5 years. Yeah, 5 years as a dietitian, a few years in eating disorders. And then when I moved over here, I actually got a pediatric role as my first role, because I had specialised in pediatrics for a couple of years as well. And then my first job in London was eating disorders. So I knew that I wanted to work in either pediatrics or eating disorders when I got to the UK. And now it's just morphed into being my sole specialty. The process to come over to the UK wasn't as difficult as what I thought. So you have to register with the Healthcare Professionals Council, and you need to give yourself about 6 months to complete the application and then for the application to be approved. And then after that, you apply for your visa. So my visa took 2 weeks to come through, which was a lot quicker than what I expected. But aside from that, then you move over. Before I moved over, actually, I registered with quite a few recruitment companies, and they just would email you through jobs like every day. There's so many jobs available. And I ended up getting a job outside of London. I think if I'd been a bit more patient, I could have gotten a job in London, but I wanted to secure something before I flew over. So I lived about 2 hours outside of London, just north of Birmingham, so really in the middle of England. and stayed there for about 5 months before making the move down to London.
And was that in the paediatrics role, and then you went and then you moved to London for
an eating disorders role? Yeah, so my first job working in eating disorders in London was on an adult inpatient unit, which is part of the Maudsley Hospital. So the Maudsley is, I guess, the main eating disorders hospital in the UK. It's quite well known for its research in the field of eating disorders and mental health and psychiatry. So it was, yeah, so it was, again, I was pretty lucky, but that's the great thing with the locum work over here in the UK is that there are so many positions and you can just get experience really quick in lots of different areas. Whereas in Australia, we don't have locum opportunities like this. So I understand, you know, and myself being in the position, I understand why, you know, so many dietitians actually do come over here to get experience and then go back to Australia, having gained more experience than maybe some dietitians, may have if they had stayed. Not to say everyone has to do it, but.
Yeah, and just clarifying, is a locum like a reliever that comes into school, that kind of thing? Like they come in and relieve a position. Is that kind of what a locum is? Or can you describe what a locum is for us?
Yeah, because it is a different terminology. So a locum is, so if a dietetics department is trying to fill a position, so NHS is quite slow at filling positions and they have very long periods where if someone gets a new job, it might be like up to 1 to 3 months before they leave. So like a 1 to 3 month notice period. So a lot of the locum roles are to actually fill in between recruiting. So you might be, it might be like, okay, we need a dietitian, or someone might go on maternity leave, or they might be unwell, or it might be the winter season and things are busy and the hospital might just say to a recruitment company, okay, I need a dietitian for 2 weeks or 1 month or 3 months. So yeah, it's just sort of filling in the gaps. A department might get a bit of extra funding, so they employ a locum rather than going through the interview process and employing someone for a short term.
Mm-hmm. And how do you find working with so many different groups of people, like in a locum role? I guess it would be, is it challenging in that way that you don't kind of go to work and know who you're going to necessarily work with or kind of build, you see the same patients? Yeah. What are the challenges associated with that sort of work?
Yes, I think it depends on the locum position that you are in. So when I work, my first job, I was there for 5 months and I was the pediatric dietitian. So I took on my own caseload and grew that role to be my own. And then similarly in my second, actually I had three locum positions. The second one was very similar, that I was there for 3 months and I was the only dietitian. But the third locum position that I was in, I really just got thrown in, and there are about six different locations that I had to work in because it was as an in and outpatient role, which was challenging because I didn't know anyone. It was new faces every day. Again, I was the only dietitian on site, so I'd have to introduce myself to the receptionist and, you know, the doctor and whoever else was there that I needed to. Even little things like not having the right keys or the passcode to get through doors, not knowing the processes, not having another dietitian there to just ask, hey, how do you document this? Or how do I post a letter to the doctor? All of those little things, it does slow you down, but it's just about giving yourself some time to learn the processes. And the more you do it, the more you work in lots of different areas, you do end up picking up how things work, because it is a little bit different working in Australia to the UK, but there's, you know, majority are similarities in how we work as dietitians.
And speaking of like Australia compared to the UK, did you feel you kind of had to reestablish yourself and I guess rebuild your network moving to the UK?
Yeah, definitely. I'm trying to think if I knew any dietitians when I came over here. I think I knew one from like a friend of a friend, so I didn't, yeah, I didn't know them that well. But definitely once I moved to London, because I knew that's where I was going to stay, I actively sought out networking opportunities. And the best way for me was actually through Instagram. So when I first moved to London, I DM'd a bunch of nutritionists and dietitians that I was already following. And I went for coffee dates, I went for wine dates. I just made connections that way. And then similar to in Australia, when you register with the British Dietetic Association, so similar to Dietitians Australia, they have branches, and there was a London branch and eating disorder sort of network group, which I joined and went to some of their monthly meetings as well. And I got myself a mentor. So my mentor had been living here. She's actually Australian, but she's been living in the UK for 15 years. So she had a network of dietitians that she knew. And then you just build up your network through the jobs that you're working in. But I definitely had to start from scratch.
And can you walk us through a typical week in your life now? So do you have kind of one full-time role in the NHS, or do you have multiple? Because you've said also you do work seeing patients one-on-one. So how does everything fit into your life?
Yeah. So it's definitely a lot calmer now than it was towards the end of last year. The end of last year, I was working technically three jobs, but then running my own business as well. So it was quite a busy time, but now it's more stable. So I work 3 days a week on an inpatient eating disorders unit. It's actually for a private hospital. So it's not the NHS. And then I work on my other 2 days as Talia Cicchelli, as a freelance dietitian. So I work at the Retrition Clinic as a contractor or subcontractor, seeing clients one-on-one. And that's all online at the moment. So my typical week is that I'll come back from the hospital on a Monday, and then I'll do an evening clinic and I'll work until about 9 o'clock. And then Tuesday and Thursday I'm at the hospital, and Wednesday is another of my clinic days. And then Friday I try and schedule as my admin day to catch up on all of my notes, do other bits and pieces like content creation and updating my website, all of those, fun things. Mm-hmm.
And how do your clinic days differ from your hospital days?
Yeah. So my role at the hospital is mainly to support my clients to be on a meal plan that's going to help them to achieve their goals. So for the majority would be weight gain. Some clients or patients will come in engaging in lots of compensatory behaviours, so things like purging, binging, excessive exercise. So if they don't need to gain weight, then it's about creating a meal plan for them that is going to help to stabilize and normalize their eating behaviors. So that's one part of my role. I also run a nutrition group once a week, and then I also run what we call social eating groups. So once a week, I will take the clients that are up to that stage of going out of the hospital to eat to a cafe, where we'll get a snack. So it might be it's usually something challenging to challenge their food fears. So it might be coffee and cake or an ice cream or milkshake, anything like that. And then I also take them out on a different day to have lunch in a restaurant, again, where we're challenging food rules and fears, having more of a high energy meal. And then I also, we once a week meet as a team to do a multidisciplinary team meeting or a ward round, where we see the patients one-to-one within the team and we review their progress that week, and then we talk about their goals for the following week. So that's really my inpatient role. And then my role as a freelance dietitian seeing clients one-to-one is So I do specialize in eating disorders and disordered eating, but it's your sort of typical consultation, similar to if you're an outpatient dietitian. So, you know, during the first assessment, you would go through your history, your ABCD, and then the follow-up sessions are really just about reviewing progress and helping the client to move forward. But a lot of my work is helping my clients to improve their relationship with food and their bodies. And I think the main difference is that I'm part counsellor, part dietitian. So specifically working in eating disorders, there are sessions where I don't even talk about food at all. And that's where my professional development has really helped me to build those counselling skills, because I definitely could not do the quality of the work that I'm doing currently when I first graduated. It has been many years of learning, and I'm 8 years out of graduating now. So it has taken a lot of time to get here, and there's definitely still lots of things that I want to learn, and there's lots of courses that I still want to do. And it's just being realistic that being a dietitian, you are going to be learning for the rest of your life. And I think, you know, most of us actually enjoy that process, because it means that we can be better dietitians and really change with the evidence and, you know, the advice that's out there at that point in time.
That's really good to know, because I think I was looking at the Master of Dietetics and thinking there's nothing in there in terms of going and if you want to go down the kind of route that you did, as you said. Yeah. The Master of Dietetics gives you you can become an accredited practicing dietitian. And of course it's, you know, you couldn't do what you do without being a dietitian. But in terms of that, you know, that niche knowledge, just hearing that it's taken you kind of 8 years and you're still learning and developing, like, I think that's so, it gives me a lot of, I guess, solace. And I think it's very helpful, because I think, well, it's not, it's not like you have to get to the end of 4.5 years or 5 years and know everything, because, you know, obviously that's not the case. But it's fantastic that there are so many CPD kind of courses and programs that you can go and do to better yourself as a dietitian.
Definitely.
So in what ways do you find working with patients who, you know, have disordered eating habits or eating disorders challenging? And how do you kind of separate your own relationship with food to that of the people that you work with?
Yeah, so I think early on, one of the challenges that I faced was helping my clients to be motivated to change, and also learning very quickly about the language that you use in this area of work, that you have to be so careful. Because depending how you say things, it can be quite triggering. And I learnt that from mistakes. So there are, you know, you're not going to be, you know, what you do is not going to be absolutely perfect all the time. You will make mistakes, and that's how you learn as a dietitian. So it is allowing you to grow from things that you might say wrong, you know, nothing serious, but, you know, you might just, you know, mislabel a term, and working in eating disorders, you know, some of the patients have, you know, very difficult pasts, and the information that you give them can be quite sensitive. So it's definitely learning how to navigate someone's past history and helping to move them forward along their recovery. And working in eating disorders is very draining. So, you know, even working privately, there are only so many clients that I can see in a day. Whereas, you know, I think if you worked in but there are definitely some areas of dietetics where I'm sure there are private practitioners that are smashing out, you know, 10, 15 clients a day. Whereas, you know, I can only really manage 6 to 8 maximum before my mental health is really impacted, because there is a lot of weight that you hold in those sessions, and you really can go into a lot of serious conversations about the past, trauma that people have experienced. So working in eating disorders, you definitely need to know your boundaries. Mm-hmm. And that I've only learned that through working in this area for many years now. And I think it's the realization that at the moment, because of what we know about eating disorders, that, you know, only 50% of the people that you work with are going to recover. So it's knowing that you're going to be working with people that are chronically ill and will not be able to get better, but it's working with them in a different way. So that might look like, for some people, living off Ensure, a mix of Ensure and some foods that they find to be safe. It might mean that they do volunteer work or work part-time, and that's absolutely amazing. It might mean that they, you know, that they have to come in and out of hospital every year, and that's okay as well, because, you know, eating disorders are different for everyone. So yeah, I think it's that realization as well, that you won't be able to help everyone. And again, it comes down to your skills, not as a dietitian, but learning those counselling skills too, and how to actually work differently in a session. So it's not that traditional sense. And when it comes to eating, so to answer the second part of your question about my relationship with food, I think I've been very blessed or privileged that I think, you know, majority of my life, aside from I think 1 month when I was 15 or 16, I've had a really good relationship with food. So that's what I bring to my sessions with clients, is that I bring a very lighthearted approach. I'm, you know, a good role model of normal eating. And I'm more than happy to eat challenging foods with my clients. So when I go out for social, I will go and have the same foods as them. I will go and eat pizza with them, even though I don't feel like it. So I think for me, it's more about using my really healthy relationship with food, trying to help my clients see that that's actually possible, that you can eat all of these different foods and maintain your weight and live a healthy life.
You sound like you're such a positive role model. I think the field is so lucky to have someone like you, and to be able to demonstrate that, you know, positive or, you know, normal relationship with food. So our final section of the podcast, we kind of get you to look back a bit and give some advice for students and graduates who are looking to pursue a career in the field of eating disorder, nutrition and dietetics. So I think you've actually given a really good kind of insight for us already about what it's like to work as an eating disorder dietitian. But maybe could you tell us a little bit about, you know, who specifically are the types of patients that you work with? Like, are you involved in kind of the diagnosis process, or do you say, I don't want to say get a patient, but, you know, get assigned a patient, I guess, when they've already gone through that kind of thing? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So definitely in the hospital setting, everyone will have come into the hospital with a diagnosis. But in my private work, a lot of the time I'm the first person that they've seen. So someone, you know, I think there's such a stigma with eating disorders that people are afraid to go and talk to their GP. They're afraid to tell their partner, afraid to tell their parents. So a lot of the time in private work, I'm the first person that they're telling about their disordered eating. And it might just be disordered eating, but there's been times that I've, you know, sat in that room with the person in front of me and I'm like, oh no, this is much more severe than what you think it is. And I have diagnosed people with having an eating disorder before. And that's only come from me working in this area for a long time. I definitely wouldn't have done it early on. And even now, if I'm a bit hesitant, I'll just, you know, I'll have that discussion with my client saying like, look, I think you meet X, Y, Z criteria. I think what you actually have is an eating disorder. And then, you know, as part of my work in the private space is working closely with the GP, referring to a psychologist or psychiatrist if needed. But yeah, there's definitely a mix. So I work with people that have eating disorders, so anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, binge eating disorder, orthorexia. But then a lot of the clients that I see don't fit into those clinically diagnosed eating disorders. So they fit outside that space, and it might be a level of disordered eating and having an unhealthy relationship with food. So there's, yeah, definitely a broad spectrum. And with eating disorders too, it's transdiagnostic. So, you know, someone might develop anorexia nervosa, and then because they gain weight and change their behaviours, they don't meet that criteria anymore. So then they move into the space of, you know, other specified feeding and eating disorders, and then it might morph into something else. So I think sometimes labeling someone having a particular eating disorder can be helpful, but then it can also be unhelpful because how we eat and our relationship with food changes over time.
And how frequently would you see the same patient? Like, does that change as well?
Yeah, definitely. So it because I do work privately, it depends on their financial situation, the level of support that they would like. For anyone with anorexia nervosa, I like to see them fortnightly. So fortnightly or maybe every 3 weeks, depending on how they're progressing and the level of support that they need. If they're significantly underweight, then I need to be seeing them regularly, especially if they're at risk of refeeding syndrome and managing that in the community setting. So it could range anywhere from fortnightly. Some people I'll see monthly, and then it spaces out. So as you progress, the frequency of sessions becomes less.
Mm.
Yeah, and I might work with someone, you know, working in eating disorders, you're going to be, if someone's really engaged, you'll be working with them for a long time because you can't reverse someone's relationship with food in a four week, 8 week sort of program style of treatment that you might see advertised. It is long term, and it's a long term commitment. Anywhere from 3 months to, you know, a year. And then people might, you know, check in sort of less frequently after that. And people bounce in and out of treatment as well. So, you know, you might really stabilize your eating behaviors and be doing well. And then, you know, a few years down the track, you might need support again. So there's definitely not an end to working together, or a finite end. The door is always open.
Mm. And you said kind of at the beginning, your kind of first experience with working as a dietitian, eating disorders, that you just kind of fell in love with it. So what do you love about being an eating disorder dietitian?
Yeah, I love that as a dietitian, you are a very valued member of the team and of treatment. So having the privilege to help to change someone's life or turn their life around by improving their relationship with food and their body is so rewarding. And that's what I fell in love with. I think it was the connection and working so closely within the multidisciplinary team, and it was just such a rewarding area to work in. Very challenging, but equally very rewarding. Mm-hmm. And for me as well, what I really liked working in this area was, and I think I mentioned it before, that it's not really your traditional area of dietetics, that you can get really creative with what you do. And it's being more of a counsellor as well. For me, that's something that I really like. So you're not prescriptive, you're not creating meal plans and crunching numbers. It's more a conversation about food. And I think because I love food and I'm so passionate about it, I love sharing that with people. And I love seeing that someone can go from eating such a restricted diet to then working with me and challenging their eating behaviours. And, you know, getting that message for them to say, oh my God, Talia, like I just had cake today, or another really, you know, exciting, part of recovery is when people, you know, when women get their period back, and to be a part of that is, it's just, yeah, it's really special.
Mm.
I think that was her elevator pitch right there, Charlotte.
I know. I was trying to say, we've been asking all of our guests this season to give an elevator pitch, but you've just done it just then. I don't think we need to ask you. Unless there was anything, if there's anything else you'd like to add, kind of an elevator pitch for students that are kind of, you know, have listened to the past 50 minutes and think, wow, this is kind of what I want to go into.
Yeah, I think just be open-minded that you won't know everything. Be willing to learn, be willing to ask for advice, and be open to opportunities and just see where life takes you with your career. Give things a go. It may or may not work, but things will fall into place. And if you are interested in working in eating disorders, particularly if, you know, if you have an interest at university, because, you know, obviously I didn't. So if you do, then one thing that I would really encourage you to do is with your placements. If it is in a hospital, see if there is an eating disorder service or if there are any patients that have eating disorders on the ward. It might be not be with the supervisor that you have, but maybe a different dietitian, to try and gain a little bit of experience while you're still at university to see if it is right for you.
That's a great pointer. Thank you for that. Our next few questions, I'm really interested to know, you've talked a lot about the multidisciplinary approach throughout this whole conversation, but what, you know, on an eating disorder patient's team, what are the main difference between a psychologist's role and a dietitian's role?
Yeah, so the treating for eating disorders is very much like a parallel. So you have your nutrition therapy and your psychotherapy. So as a dietitian, your role is to really ensure that the patient is on a meal plan or on a diet that is going to help them to achieve their recovery goals. So we need to be focusing on things like regularity of eating, making sure they're getting enough, the variety of foods. It's our job to give the clients or patients education about nutrition, the importance of nutrition, because a lot of the work that I do is myth busting, based on, you know, things that someone may have seen or read, but also just because the nature of eating disorders, they're very sneaky and they're going to try and get the person to believe things that are not true about nutrition, like if you eat X, Y, and Z, you're going to gain weight or you're going to put on fat. So it's a lot of work about dispelling those myths and helping the patient to actually commit to a challenge or an experiment, and just, you know, formulating a hypothesis. So if I do eat X, Y, and Z, I think that this is going to happen, but what actually happens? So it's working with them to normalize their eating behaviors, whereas so the psychologist will help with the emotions and feelings that sort of come up as a result of that, or managing anxiety, or looking at what's happened in the past that may be a maintaining factor for having an eating disorder. So if anyone's gone through any trauma, or you know, they may have experienced loss of a family member or a friend, anxiety, depression, and, you know, emotional dysregulation, the psychologist's role is going to be helping them to I guess just improve their mental health. And if, you know, if I'm doing anything that's really pushing the eating disorder when it comes to food, then the psychologist will sort of be, you know, there'll be a space to really process any thoughts or feelings that come up, any memories relating to the work that I'm doing. And again, the psychologist will educate the client just like I do with nutrition, but they'll also be educating them from the psychology point of view, and doing things like body image work, mindfulness, you know, strategies to help manage anxiety. So that's sort of that divide. There is a little bit of an overlap, definitely. But yeah, there is a lot of the work that I am not trained to do. So in an ideal world, everyone that has an eating disorder would have a dietitian and a psychologist. But that's not always, not always possible.
And do you think that when you step on some of your sessions can be half the nutrition, half counselling, how does that counselling differ to the role of the psychologist?
So I would never delve into like the past experiences. I'm not there to talk about, you know, how to manage anxiety, but I might talk about how to manage stress, or we might talk about grounding techniques, which might also be covered in the psychology session. But sometimes it comes up relating to food as well. Or the counselling, it's, so instead of, you know, talking about food per se, it's counselling because you're talking about someone's experience with that food or what emotions it brings up for someone when they eat that. So when you're eating this, how can we manage your emotions or your environment to actually support you to be able to commit to eating X, Y, and Z? So it's not the dietetic prescription of you need to eat this and this. Sometimes I don't really care what my patient's eating as long as they're just eating something, and then we're working towards normalizing food choices as we work together. So it's not, you know, your five veg, two fruit, you know, talking about importance of low fat or sodium. It's, I just need to work to get you to eat all types of foods, and we can work on that down the track. And it's counseling in regards to weight gain, fear of weight gain. So it's just coming in from a different angle where then you need to talk about that in order for someone to then have the courage to eat a bit more or eat differently to what they are.
I was just going to ask, with all that, do you feel it's somewhat of a necessity for students who are interested in going into this field to have some sort of psychology or counselling training prior to working, or whilst they're working or starting to work?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary to have that training before, but I would love for there to be more. I know that at university at the moment there is counselling. I definitely did a semester, I did a subject on counselling, but I think that as dietitians we all need to improve our counselling skills, and whether that comes from just learning on the job, which it does, it definitely does, but definitely in eating disorders, I think you will be a better eating disorder dietitian if you are able to improve those counselling skills and learning about the other treatment methods. So, you know, like I mentioned before, I've done training in cognitive behavioural therapy and family-based therapy. I'm not a CBT therapist or family-based therapist, but I understand how that works, so then I'm better able to work with the psychologist so that I don't overlap too much, and that I understand that's what they're working on, that's a style of treatment that my client is working through. But definitely picking up counselling and psychology based skills is something that has changed the way that I work. So the course that I mentioned earlier, the master practitioner course that I'm doing, has completely changed the way that I work with my clients, because I'm actually using a lot of psychology techniques in the work that I'm doing as a motivational strategy to help my clients move forward with their nutrition. It's every course that you do, you will pick up one or two things that you can bring into your own practice. And I think that's, working in eating disorders, you need those motivational skills, and you need to be able to engage your clients so that they actually stay with you for long enough to see change happen, because one or two sessions is not going to change someone's relationship with food.
And with that as well, do you feel that has, I think in this field it can sometimes be a little bit difficult to navigate, in that you might sometimes think, you know, you're walking on eggshells, either with the psychologist or even with your patients. So having that additional training, has that kind of reduced that feeling or fear even in your case?
Yeah, definitely. And I think too, the more that you learn from other members of your team, so the more that you learn from the psychologist and the psychiatrist, and it's okay to overlap a little bit, but as long as you know your boundaries. So for example, some of the psychologists I work with, because again, the nature of eating disorders, they, you know, will sometimes try and play off different members of the team, the eating disorder, you know, to see if it can get away with anything. So sometimes the psychologist might have to talk about nutrition, and I would want them to, because if you're getting two people talking about the same thing, then that's even better. So if my patient asks their psychologist, oh, Talia said I need to eat potato or whatever it may be, I wouldn't want the psychologist to just be like, oh, you need to talk about that with her. It would be like, well, yes, actually, potatoes a really good source of carbohydrate and you need that in your recovery. So even something just as simple like that, it's reassuring and it shows that everyone knows what they're talking about and we can all work together. So just form a really solid network and yeah, team, so that we are able to help that person move forward.
And just kind of leading on from that, regardless of the field that, you know, any students listening to this podcast are wanting to get into, what do you think is one skill that nutrition students could focus on learning that is outside their more academic study?
So I would have to bring it back. For me, it was counselling, yeah, and motivational interviewing. So there's motivational techniques. I think was, yeah, really important as a dietitian working in any area, because a lot of the time, you know, when we think about it, people know what to do when it comes to nutrition. They've either read it before, they've been told by their doctor, they've been told by a previous dietitian or nutritionist, but what's stopping them is actually making that change. And so we as dietitians need to know how to work with someone to engage them and work with them so that they know that this time is actually different to what they've done before, and knowing how we can take those first steps to make that behavior change.
Yeah, I really like that, and the fact that those skills are so important, even if you're wanting to, you know, I think we commonly associate, we know that, you know, psychology is so important when it comes to eating disorders, but those counseling skills would be, you know, extremely important whoever you're working with.
Yeah.
And what has been a highlight of your career so far? So what are you most proud of?
I think well, moving over to the UK and I think getting the job at the Retrition Clinic was definitely a huge highlight for me, to finally be able to work in my specialty area but in the private practice as well. But when I was working, so my first job in eating disorders, I presented my work at a conference. So I did a poster presentation and presented that. I was actually in New Zealand in Christchurch. That was a really proud moment for me to share the work of a dietitian working in adolescents in eating disorders. But yeah, definitely that would have been the highlight in Sydney. And then, coming over here and... I think it's the little things like being asked to be on a podcast. I've been on a couple of podcasts now, and that's like, wow, people actually are really interested in this area of work. And I think, you know, even as you know, silly as it sounds, building a community on social media, you don't realize how many people you actually connect with. And yeah, it's often that you reflect, as much as, you know, there's a love-hate relationship with social media, but being able to meet people in person that have connected with me online, whether that be clients or other dietitians, nutritionists, has been, yeah, something that I wouldn't have expected outside of university.
Mm-hmm. And I love seeing all of your question boxes, like going through your Q&As. I feel like you've got really engaged following and people, and obviously there's that level of kind of social trust, I guess, you know, social media trust, to kind of ask questions and have them answered in kind of that kind of more informal setting. So I think that's really amazing. And just to finish off this section, what is one bite or, you know, pearl of wisdom that you could give to current nutrition students and graduates?
It would be to keep your options open and not to box yourself into one area of dietetics, because there are lots of opportunities out there and you may never know what area you're going to work in, and it may be different to what you expected it to be.
Love that. And then just to finish off, we ask all of, I guess, the same two questions at the end. The first being, where do you see nutrition going in the future?
I see it as being more personalised. So there's a lot of research now about genetics, and especially with things like the microbiome. So I do think we're moving towards more personalised nutrition, and definitely providing our services online. So I definitely see dietetics going online, and you can already see it now because of COVID, lots of online programs, online consultations, webinars, whole heap of services, and different ways to reach people, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the kind of those upskilling in the psychology area, which obviously you have done kind of a lot of CPD in that, particularly because of the field you work in, do you think that's going to become, I guess, more imperative? Like, are you seeing a bit of a shift there in like the availability of resources?
Yeah, definitely. And I think some universities are already doing it, but adding, more counselling, more of a health at every size approach into the course, and also business skills. Because, in Australia, so many dietitians are graduating. I don't know what the percentage is that actually get a clinical role. And a lot of us are working for ourselves. So I think, if I was talking about how nutrition is going to change in terms of university degrees, and I would love to see more on disordered eating, that non-traditional approach, and also helping students to have some business skills when they leave university.
And then finally, what's your next bite? So the next project that you're working on?
Yeah, so at the moment I've got a couple of ideas. So I have just started working on an ebook, which I'm really excited about. And then I would love to also create an online program in the next year or two.
An online program as in one that you'd go through with like for patients or for professionals?
It would be patients, but I definitely have thought about professional route before. Something along to do with disordered eating and improving your relationship with food, overcoming sort of binge eating, overeating. That's sort of the area that I'd like to create a program on. And then the ebook will be more focused on weight gain, because I think that there's not much out there supporting people how to gain weight in a healthy way. So that's what I'd like to be able to create to help people. And again, for that information, just to be more accessible. I really just want to help as many people as possible. So it's about being creative on how to do that, because not everyone can afford one-to-one services.
Yeah. I think that creativity has really shined through today. And I just looked down and I realized we've kind of gone like in kind of air quotes over time, but like yeah. I think Tiana and I have just been so engrossed in asking you know, so many questions, and thank you so much, Talia. You've just given such a comprehensive kind of insight into the field, and yeah, as I said kind of earlier, I think you just bring such a kind of lightness to this. You know, it's obviously a very serious kind of area, and you know, very challenging, as you've been very kind of clear about, but I think yeah, we're just really lucky to have you, and thank you so much for coming on our podcast.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the 11th episode of The Next Bite with Talia Cacelli. I think Talia just has such a warm and comforting presence, and she was just so generous with her time and her knowledge. So next week we have one more episode before the mid-semester break, and that's going to be looking at a completely different area of nutrition and how you can actually transfer nutrition skills to business. So look out for that one too.